Hello and welcome to Scriptmate, the podcast for writers who dream of seeing their words spoken by paid actors on some sort of screen. I forgot for a second that I'm on video as well because I was like just scratching my arm.
That's good.
I'm your host, Tim Schulberger, writer and founder of Write LA, which is a writing community and writing education and resources website. Joining me is a highly skilled and moderately opinionated writer, Tony Giambuso. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Tim. You changed that opening. I like it.
I've decided that every episode now is going to have a different adjective.
Cool. All right.
About your opinions.
I'll hold you to that.
Okay. Coming up in this podcast, we're talking opening pages. We'll discuss why they matter more than you think. We'll review some of the advice floating around out there. Often it's bad. And we'll offer our own suggestions, which will be good, based on reading thousands of scripts, because we have between us read thousands of scripts. So we come by this opening pages information honestly. I'll also answer some random questions. We'll do our movie moments and we'll throw in some Aussie trivia as well. So, Tony, opening pages. Want to define what you think opening pages are? How many pages constitutes an opening?
Yeah, so I think this is one of those topics that gets very prescriptive and really it actually ties into something we talked about before where I said, we're talking about opening pages. What is that, 5 pages, 10 pages, 20 pages? And your answer was exactly what my answer is. It's generally every script is different. Every script has their own rhythm. And it's just, you know, that beginning part. Imagine yourself as a reader or you yourself are sitting down trying to judge a script, a song, a movie, a show, and the first 5 minutes, 10 minutes, you know, are sort of, it's just that beginning part.
Yeah. It's kind of the rhythm of it. Like it's some scripts take a bit of a slow burn and some of them jump straight in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's certain, also depends kind of on the genre a little bit too.
Uh-huh.
But that's part of, we're already going to get into the information that we get. You will read a lot out there that clearly define what the opening pages are. Like your first 10 pages must be this. Mm-hmm. Or your first 5 pages must be this. Or, I mean, some's like, your first act must be this.
Mm-hmm.
We are both saying that that is not something you need to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that also people, there'll be a misconception where they'll say your opening pages need to grab the reader. They need to steal their attention, which is true, obviously. But to what you just said about each script is different, each script has their own rhythm, each script has their own tone. Something as simple as the first 2 pages, super intense, dense action is not going to hook me.
No.
I'm going to look at it and I'm going to say that's a lot.
Yes.
And I think you've talked about this a lot and I'll let you kind of say it in your own words, but you talk about like the businessman on the phone. I forget how you say it, but like, you know, when I'm thinking of that, I'm like, you know, opening your shot of a baby crying is one thing. The opening shot of, a businessman in $1,000 suit on the phone crying, I'm now saying, well, what does that mean? And in a very simple, definition of drama, somebody, I forget who said it, but they were like, it's just throwing balls in the air and the drama is just waiting for them to fall down. And your drama might be, is this planet going to die or why is this businessman crying?
Well, I think part of it is, if we may have a brief discussion on the purpose of your opening pages.
Yeah.
And I know that sounds, you're probably thinking, well, I know what the purpose of the opening pages is. It's to start telling my story. Sure. But mm-hmm. I think it's also it's seen. I think you need to see it in a slightly different context in terms of what you're trying to achieve, because understanding that your opening pages are going to be read by someone in the industry, hopefully, or someone in a competition, or someone who has the potential to do something to amplify this script or move it up the totem pole or move your career up the totem pole, whatever. But there's a purpose to it. So if you think about the people who are reading this script, want to see something in this script that will allow them to move this script further down the chain.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about it in those terms, and less about I'm telling the story I want to tell, it's helpful because it's like, okay, I have to engage the reader. I have to engage an audience quickly. My purpose is I'm not just starting the story. I'm also showcasing my talent, and not just my talent, but my command of craft. It's that I understand movies and or mm-hmm. TV shows and how to write them and how to make them. You're kind of sending a lot of subliminal messages to the people reading, because the other part of the purpose, sorry, I'm going on too long, but the other part of the purpose is also understanding who's reading your script and the context of how they're and the context in which they are reading this script. And I like to say to people, because I got this from people like Sean, our literary manager, who, if you haven't heard that podcast, go back and have a listen. But people like Sean, a literary manager or a producer or an agent or an actor, but probably less actor, they have on average around about 50 scripts they should be reading every single week. I'll say it again, 50 scripts every single week. Now, many of those scripts are over 100 pages long. Do the math. The idea that they're going to read every single script all the way through every single week, and then also the script by you who they've never heard of, and they're going to read that with the full attention all the way through when they're reading their client scripts, where they're reading new scripts for their for talent that, you know, a new draft of something or whatever. That's it's naive to think about, to think that they will pay your script absolute attention from, you know, the beginning, which means you get a certain number of pages to kind of show your stuff and to show that you've got a command and that it's worth their investment of time, which is limited, to keep reading.
Yeah, and each, I think the way to approach writing them. So then, so what do I do? I don't do something crazy. I don't make it boring. It's like, well, what do you do? And I think first thing you do is oftentimes the first scene is the thing that the first thing the writer thinks of. They think of a movie starting in a way. They think of an idea, an image that sort of drew them in to the, the script in the first place. And you have to be willing to part with that, because I think what your opening is going to be some sort of reflection of your ending. You're ultimately going to look at the beginning.
Oh, go on, yes.
Well, I think it's like, you know, we talked about this before. Who's your character at the beginning? Who's your character at the end? And then the movie is everything that happens in between, right? Yeah. So if you're some idea of some dramatic question or a character or something that is at the beginning that is reflective, whether it's a mirror, whether it's an image of how the whole movie is going to go. And I think what that does is it puts the reader in your movie, as opposed to, oh, I'm writing five pages of backstory. This isn't the movie yet. Right. The movie starts on page 20. And that happens so much because we create all this fun, we do all the work. We create this fun backstory for our characters. And then we say, well, I want it to be in there.
Right.
Then, or they're not going to understand, the audience isn't going to understand how important this is unless I put the 15-page montage that tells about the character's life.
Yes, it's a fear thing too. It's like, if you don't understand who this character is, you're not going to be engaged in this story. So I'm going to have to throw a whole bunch of stuff in at the beginning in order to get you on board, which is the reverse of what you should be doing.
Yeah, start with a character doing a thing in the world, however that works for your story, your genre, and then catch us up, and then let us figure those things out, you know, in pieces. And I think when you're doing that effectively, you're communicating to the reader that this is the world that we're in, and these are some questions that are going to be asked, and here's a character that you're going to follow and care about. And that's all they need to get to page 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, because you don't have to say, here's all the reasons. Here's the whole movie in five pages.
No.
You just have to say, trust me, there's some really cool stuff coming, and you're just doing that. And then they want to read forward, because the best scripts that I read, you know, in the Write LA contest, I just say, just give me a character that I can, like, not when I say root for, I don't mean they have to be, you know, altruistic or
heroic.
Moral, right? Heroic. Just a character that I'm following, that I'm somewhat wanting to understand, and I want to see what happens to them, whether it's a person or a mouse, you know?
Right. That's a good point, because it's also give me an idea of whose movie this is. Too, because you see a lot of scripts that, because they're so full of backstory, or they're so full of, I've got to introduce all these characters so then they can kind of weave in, or you'll see how I weave them in later on, you're left by, you know, page 10 or whatever, being like, I don't know who I'm supposed to care about here, or who the main person is. I mean, we're doing live reads at the moment, where we're having people are giving us their scripts, and we're putting them on. We're doing live table reads with amazing actors, by the way, which we'll talk about later. But anyway, as we're doing that, it's like you're reading the script and you're like, okay, you've got you've got an interaction here between what I think is your main character and a waiter at a restaurant that goes on for 2 pages, mm-hmm. but that waiter does not appear again in the rest of your script.
Yeah.
Why? Because it was just an interaction in that opening. Why are you using your opening pages to introduce, to spend that much time with a character that has nothing to do with your story?
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm looking at it from a casting point of view, because we're like, okay, that person's talking. And then you're like, okay, well, where else is this person? Oh, they don't appear again.
And this is part of the drafting process. It's okay if your first, I've done this for my first yes. 5 drafts, had that waiter. And then we keep saying, someone will say, you know, it's a little slow. It picks up really around here. And then I go, well, wait, why don't I just cut that character? What if I figure out, that's our job, right? To figure out a more creative way to get that information out. Or the big question, which this goes for your entire script, is do I need that information?
Right.
And I think it's fine to write it in your early drafts because you're trying to figure out what the reader needs. And oftentimes the reader will... If you're getting, this is why feedback is so important, because they'll say, well, I didn't understand this. And you say, okay, now I got to put some more context in here. But likely we want less. Likely the yes. audience wants less information.
We don't need it. We don't need most of the stuff you think you need. If you're a writer right now listening to this, I guarantee you most of the stuff you are thinking you absolutely need in your opening pages, you don't need
mm-hmm.
As a rule. You really need the bare essentials to throw us into a story
mm-hmm.
And to throw us a character that we want to see in a story. It's not just throw us into a story. It's got to involve someone that we are at least, we understand it's their story. We understand what the challenges are. And we're like, okay, give me something.
And just on like a very like sort of practical level, and I know someone will listen to this and point to like 100 scripts that do it otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But unless you're, you know, James Cameron, do not... I would just suggest, like you're talking about, Tim, someone's reading 50 scripts in a week.
Mm-hmm.
They're obviously prioritizing scripts for their clients and scripts that they're working on or producing over new entries. And if the pages open up with dense, you know, 10, you know, lines in a row, like a novel, they're going to skim it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say for the contest, at least, you know, when we're reading those early pages, we're not skimming, we're reading, because the goal is to help people, especially if you're giving feedback. But a production company or a management company, they're going to skim it and they might lose some piece of information. And so just make it, you know, make it readable. And also, you know, nobody is going to reject your script because there's a spelling error or something like that.
No.
But if there's 5, if there's 10 within the first 5 or 10 pages, it will feel like you're not respecting their time. And also it could have an effect on your script that maybe that spelling error changes the meaning of a word, or you accidentally had the wrong character thing, you know, and so they get a little lost, and then it just, they're out.
Yeah. Well, and it also, you're right about the respect thing, because it's like, I'm taking the time to read this and you didn't take the time to spell check in the first 5 pages. Or spell check, like one, I mean, I've seen an error in the first sentence. And I'm like, what, are you reading this? Have you read this? What are you doing? And so, yeah, I mean, I agree with all of that. And I think it is the opening pages. Oh, I also say, I was trying to think of what I thought of and then I forgot. not just dense scene description. Also, I would argue, resist the urge to be really clever in your scene description and to be like, I'm going to be, or break the wall, you know, like the fourth wall, and make it seem like, you know, we're all in this together, and make some sort of cutesy comments or snarky stuff, or just be really careful with that, because most of the time we're reading, and everybody in the industry who's reading, they're reading as part of their job. They're not sitting down with a glass of wine with their feet on the couch watching like, okay, you know, entertain me. They are reading for a job. Mm. And so when you're in a sense wasting their time by throwing in a lot of like cutesy stuff, they're like, great, cutesy, you know, fuck off and get to the story. Like or get to the characters. What do I need to know here? How do I get this movie going? How can you just give me enough that I can turn on my imagination, kickstart it and get it going. You don't need that. Again, you don't need to explain everything. My imagination's pretty good. And I certainly don't need you showing me that you think you're very clever.
Yeah. Quick little anecdote. When I was a kid, I was probably, I don't know, 10. I fancied myself a writer and I wrote, you know, that was, you know, my parents were supportive and, oh, Tony is the writer and all that stuff. So I internalized that I could do this, and that support and that privilege was really helpful.
You poor bastard.
I know.
Yeah.
And I know. But I was one day in school, I was very young, and there was a professional author, like children's or middle grade author, who had come, and it was a big deal. And he sat down and he said, okay, can anyone give us an idea for an opening sentence? And I was like, me, because like, I'm the writer. And I gave him this sentence. I don't remember what it was, but I remember it had the word picturesque. I remember saying like, you know, the clouds, you know, whatever over the picturesque snowy mountains of Vermont. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay. And he goes, how about this? I hate pizza. and you know, Daisy grabs the remote, you know, and he was like, the thing was like, we're setting it in action. Yes, maybe this book or this movie would open with a picturesque shot, but you don't necessarily need to spend 5 lines describing the beauty of it unless you're writing a novel or a short story. Right. Then by all means, do that.
Right.
But, you know, get us into the action, I would say.
Couple of quick ones, too. No need for a hand brushing wheat in a wheat field is there in your opening sentence. And also, please, sweet, merciful baby Jesus, baby Jeebus, no shot of unpaid bills to imply that your character is broke. There seems to be some accepted standard that the only way you can show someone doesn't have any money by showing them coming home to a crappy apartment and seeing a whole bunch of unpaid bills. Mm-hmm. We've seen it.
Yeah.
If we see it in a script, and I guarantee you, everybody in the industry, if they see it in a script, they're like, this person is not using all of their brain. Yeah.
Or the alarm clock.
Yeah, the alarm clock stuff without any gimmick to it. I mean, it's Sean, Sean, the literary manager, said he really feels that like it's the 8th or 9th draft where the opening pages start to come into their own. Where it's like, you don't have to settle on your first idea.
Well, that was my point. Yeah. You move away from that first idea.
Yeah.
Let the movie become what it wants to be. And then your opening and your ending become more reflective of the movie as you figure out what the movie is and what the character's journey is.
And also, if you're sitting there with the unpaid bills, if you have a character, you're like, okay, I want to show that this character is broke, it's okay to write down, okay, what are all the cliches? What are the ways I've seen a character on a movie, in a movie or in a TV show that doesn't have any money? What are they? So that I know what I'm dealing with. And then it's like, okay, how can I subvert that? Or how can I add my own spin on that? What can I do differently? It's going to require thinking. Mm-hmm. And a bit of creativity and a bit of bravery, because it's like there's this fight you have with yourself. It's like, well, I can't go too far away from what they've seen before because I don't want to be too original. But if I do what they've seen before, they're going to call it cliched and boring. So what do I do? And it's like, yeah, that's hard. Go with the first one. Understand. Have a go at something different. It's better to try to take a swing than it is to show a shot of unpaid bills. Because it just shows, if this is how you're starting your movie, then it gives a sort of a subliminal message to the reader that this is not going to be particularly creative.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not giving us something that's a new spin on it, and you're not elevating yourself as a talent that they need to pay attention to, because they're going to look at that and be like, well, I can get 17 writers to write that.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I need to waste time on a brand new one? Because I've got 17 that I know will deliver. I know have a track record. I had a conversation with a development executive the other day, and they were talking about a writer attached to a new project that was pitched, and the money person said, but this writer has no track record. And that's going to make it harder for us to sell and to set up at a studio, because you've attached a writer that has no track record. So understand, this is the way the industry works. So they have to fight extra hard to launch someone new. So make their life as easy as you can. The opening pages are really important. You are sending lots of messages. You are showing what you're showing your stuff. But, and this is quickly, you don't need, there is some advice out there that says you've got to have something dramatic on every page. You've got to have something huge on, you know, it's got to be, bring all your best stuff, shove it into your first 10 pages and then let's see what happens. I would argue, no, you don't need to do that. There can be quiet moments in your first 10 pages. It doesn't have to be all loud. It doesn't have to be all nonstop story. It is just crafted. You're just showing craft. And that's not, it doesn't have to be enormous.
I mean, yeah, you're showing me something. I think there was a script, I don't know when I read it, where I read it, but it was a father and a young girl, and they were doing DoorDash or Uber Eats together. And that's just like a more unusual thing at the time. You don't usually see sometimes you see couples, but you rarely see like a little kid, and they were just walking around and they were having a tough time and not a ton was happening.
And an alien ate their head off.
But I was so invested because I was so curious about what's the situation of this thing. So it was quiet. It was thoughtful. They were just moments. They weren't these big things, but I was definitely needing it. And it was well-written and thoughtful and all of that. So plenty more to talk about with opening pages and pages and all of that stuff. But for now, I think we summed it up pretty well. I want to hear a movie moment you might have for today.
Yes. And by the way, if you have any questions, feel free to follow-ups, feel free to email us.
Oh, we love reading your questions.
We do love reading your questions, and we love reading your opinions. Tim@write-la.com. Tim@write-la.com. Movie moment. What did I have for the movie moment for this one? I tried to watch Saturday Night because of SNL.
Yeah.
The SNL 50th. Saturday Night was about that. Yeah. I got 10 minutes in and I was like, this isn't a movie. And I turned off and I watched Darkest Hour because I felt like watching Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill. I don't know why it popped into my head, but it did. But watching those two films back to back, like the first 10 minutes of one versus the first 10 minutes of the other, speaking of opening pages, was fascinating because Saturday Night, you watch it and it's like, there's no movie here. This is just a ticking clock and a bunch of actors trying to play real life characters, many of whom are still alive. There's no sort of story structure. It's just, we got to get this show on TV. Isn't this wacky and it could go horribly wrong? It's very disorganized. Might have been nicely shot, might have been nicely acted, but I'm just sitting there like, why am I here? Like, what is this? Mm-hmm. Then you flash it over to the Darkest Hour and you've got Winston Churchill, who's not yet prime minister, and you've got like constitutional crisis within the English government, and they're picking, and it's like, well, we can't pick that guy. They don't even mention his name. They're just like, well, I have to resign because, you know, war is coming and I wanted to make peace with Hitler, failed. I'm going to have to go. Who are we going to get to replace me? And they're all looking at one another like, we can't, can we? Yeah. And then you cut to this dude who's in bed, smoking a cigar, quoting, you know, with a new secretary, and you're in. In 10 minutes, you're like, this is this obnoxious character who's going to try to save England during their darkest hour. And the contrast between the two was fascinating.
Yeah, I find that there's some movies that are almost more performance pieces than they are movies.
Yes.
And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. I haven't seen it yet, so I can't judge it. But I feel like that has been a general criticism of that.
Yeah, it's
of
not
that
a film. It's not a movie. Yours?
For me, it's... I watched The Substance.
Oh, yes.
And I am not a big fan of body horror, although this isn't torture porn body horror like Saw. It's more, it's things that don't really exist, like a woman climbing out of another woman's back. Like, it's clearly, you know.
Wait, that doesn't exist? Okay.
If you've seen it. But so what I really appreciated about that movie is that it had one thing to say and it was not shy about saying it. And then it just said it over and over and over again, but in heightening ways.
Okay.
So I feel like a lot of movies that I've been watching recently, they come out with these big ideas, these big themes, which is fine. Have all the themes and ideas you want, but they don't necessarily even investigate those themes. You don't have to come to an answer on those themes, but they don't even, it's like a chef who like has all these cool ingredients, but then doesn't cook with them. And you're like, you just want credit for having them, but you didn't actually make anything.
Right.
And so... what I liked about The Substance was it was the inverse of that. It was like, here's the theme of the movie, and it's not going to be episodic. It's not going to be linear because we're just going to keep going. And that is the very quality of the movie that I think the people that didn't like it didn't like, oh, it got a little crazy at the end there. But I love that, and again, the opening shot and the ending shot of the movie are the same. They're the same shot, but then there's different action that happens within the shot. And I really appreciated how the movie wasn't trying to be... in its attempt to like not be edgy and provocative, it was edgy and provocative.
All right. I haven't seen it yet. I did try to watch Emilia Perez, but the less I say about that, the better.
Okay. Let's do some listener questions. As we said, we love to get your questions.
We do.
Okay. Here's a question. How do you keep Act 2 from sagging? I always feel like my scripts lose momentum in that section.
That is the greatest question in all of screenwriting. I don't think there is a writer that exists who has ever written anything for the screen that doesn't have that question and does not have an easy answer for it. It's hard. And I've written scripts where people are like, man, the first 20 pages were amazing. And then, and then the end was fine, but it was live reads are a great thing to do that. I don't mean to keep hitting up live reads, but it's really fascinating when you hear it because the crowd, if especially in front of an audience where it's like the opening pages, everybody's like, yeah. And then you feel the audience settle and you're like, oh no, we're in the middle. We're sort of drifting off now where it's like, oh. So I'm agreeing with the question while covering and hoping we run out of time before I have to find an answer. I don't know what the answer is. It is hard.
Yep.
It is a really, the middle is really challenging. The only advice I would say was that just stick to, it's a bit like running a marathon, I think. It's like at that point, you have to stick to the process. It's like I've got to make sure my scenes are revealing new information. I've got to make sure that the story keeps elevating and that the characters are sort of digging into this and revealing things about themselves and their relationships are shifting and evolving. So it's kind of like just you got to put your head down and just keep going.
Yep. I feel like exactly. It's like the unanswerable question.
It's a hard one.
You know, it's everything you're saying. I agree with. And also, you know, watch movies. Watch movies that work. Watch movies that don't work. Read scripts of those movies. Read scripts of those other movies. And figure out, well, what is this movie doing to hold my attention at this moment? So we had our great opening, and then we had our big, you know, break into act two, and we have all these all the form stuff that we follow, and then why is this movie more entertaining in minute 50 than it was in minute 10? What is it doing? And then likewise, why is this movie not working? And just study it, study the craft.
Yeah, I think also just that's probably the time where you're kind of really enriching the relationships so that you can then either tear them apart at the end of act two or start to mess with them. And so it's really the time time where you kind of get, you get sort of more into the whole, you know, this is why we're here. But it's hard. It's really hard. It's just, you just keep going. And also, the other thing I was going to say was just try to avoid, I find act two sometimes get a little lost in logistics at that point where it's like, okay, now I'm going to fill in the stuff or now I have to get them from here to there. And it's sort of like, stick to your form. Like every scene needs to earn its place. Don't get bogged down in sort of more logistically type stuff.
It's the accent.
Yeah, it is. It's really hard. Nuclear is another one. So because you can sometimes get a little bit lost in the logistics of it. So it's really just stay true to form and really make sure every scene is really there. You know exactly why it's there and what new information it's delivering. And then keep your fingers crossed.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes there's a reversal around the midpoint. Sometimes there's a false positive where a character thinks they get everything they want. Sometimes in movies, the character does get everything they want and then realize they don't want it. I know a lot of different things say, either they're more prescriptive or they say, this is how you do it. And I think it is ultimately more of a feel thing. But I think the guiding principle is what you just said, Tim, which is don't forget just how to be a screenwriter. You know, each scene has, you know, character drives plot. You know, each scene has to earn its place. And I think that you'll find that those pages will at minimum be much tighter. And then you can start thinking about, you know, and just, you know, beat out your scripts, however it works, whether it's a software or you use your note cards and you're looking at that section and saying, what am I putting here to make sure this movie doesn't stay like episodic or linear,
right?
And making you feel like it's heightening.
Yeah. I mean, I'm writing a rom-com at the moment and the second act is like, I've got to, what do I want by the end of it and where I want them. And I feel like that's the moment where things start to kind of go, you know, pear-shaped, as they say.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's do one more. How do you handle exposition without making it feel clunky or unnatural?
Less is more. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Less is more. Clunky or unnatural. If you're in the realm of clunky and unnatural, question what's absolutely necessary in there, and do I need it? And I'm pretty sure most of it will be I do not. I'm putting it in because I feel this would be helpful for you to understand the character. Most of the time you don't. So I would start by cutting. I would start by looking at like, what do I really need the audience to know in this particular scene for this particular scene to make sense? And then in terms of clunky exposition in dialogue, that's a challenge. And I would just keep having a go at it until, I wouldn't settle for one. And I certainly wouldn't settle for, hey, Jim, I haven't seen in, you know, 6 months. How's that lemon grove that you're doing that I know got attacked by beetles last week when your wife died three months ago? what's going on? Just try to sort of assume, like, how would these people talk if they were in a regular relationship? And then if there is information, again, use your audience's imagination. You can tease, you can be like, hey, sorry. And the guy's like, yeah, it's been tough. And that's all. Mm-hmm. And we can be like, okay, well, mm-hmm. what's happened? And that's all we need. We don't need all the explanation. You can use that. Just understand your audience's imagination, because you are an audience member and you have an imagination. So the bare minimum would be my answer.
I couldn't agree with that more. I think it's...
Oh, go on. Do. Yeah. Agree with it more.
I'll agree with it more. No, but it's to say, we touched on this earlier with the opening pages, the audience needs less than you think they do. Yes. We don't, does it matter in this opening scene if we know that the characters are brothers? Do you need to say, come on, little bro? You know, do we care? Like, these are two men in a bar. And isn't it better that we maybe come to that information 2 pages later, 3 pages later, in a more natural way than a character is just saying? Or we talked about the overdue bills. Is there a way to put that, do we need to know in the first 3 pages that this character is broke? Can't we see it through set design? Can we see it through the decisions that they make? Can we see, the bad example, but, they're at the grocery store and they're price, comparing. And
they're fishing around. I thought the same thing. They're fishing around in their pocket looking for the coupon.
Exactly.
And it's like, I thought I put it in here, I had it, and they can't afford this thing without the coupon.
Yeah, and even that might be a little on the nose, as we say, but at least you're do better.
What are you saying?
but it's in the right direction, right? You're setting it in action, and just so many times where it's like, we just don't need this information. Certain genres maybe do that, maybe a sitcom genre where it's like, okay, we might need to just put this information, whatever. You see it more in pilots, but more often than not, I think it was, I don't know if it was Sorkin, but it was give the audience 2 + 2, not 4. Like, right. Let them just be in the world. Because if you walked into a room of people, you don't necessarily need to go, hi, so that's Jane and that's John, and they've been married for 5 years and they have a 1 year. Like, you just get to know them and you learn about it in real time.
Yeah. Plus, you don't remember any of that crap anyway. People give you the whole litany of their whole backstory, and you're like, 5 minutes later, you're like, what, who were they?
Yeah. Also, just in general, if it feels clunky and unnatural, then it is.
Yes.
trust yourself. You're working hard as a screenwriter. Like, trust yourself. You're your best judge of character. And get notes and ask someone to say, and then if someone says, no, that's fine, like, that's actually okay, then go for it. Yeah. But you should workshop it.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's talk about some Australian
stuff.
All
right. There was a movie called On the Beach that was shot in 1959 in Australia. Oh, yeah. It's from a Neville Shute novel. It was about, basically, it was the first book about the end of the world, nuclear holocaust, and the idea that it affected the rest of the world, but Australia was sort of the last place that wasn't affected. So they shot it in Melbourne in 1959. Gregory Peck, Ava Gardner, Fred Astaire all arrived in Melbourne in 1959. And it's famous. The movie itself was pretty average. But it became famous in Australia from a quote from Ava Gardner, which said, they said, how are you finding Melbourne? And she said, Melbourne is the perfect city to shoot a movie about the end of the world.
So snarky, these old school movie stars.
That became hugely huge in Australia. It turns out it was false. It was made up by a journalist.
Oh, wow.
Neil Gillett made it up. So poor old Ava got slagged by Australia for decades, and it was fake. Fake news.
Oh, wow.
But isn't that a great quote,
though? Justice for Ava Gardner.
Can you imagine Ava Gardner? You can totally imagine her saying that. It's like, what do you think of Melbourne? It's the perfect place to shoot a movie about the end of the world. It's like, oh, okay, fine. There you go.
Amazing. Good.
So that's it. That's it for this edition of Scriptmate. We are brought to you by Write LA, a screenwriting community. You can visit our website to get more tips, helpful information, read articles, watch videos, learn all about the ways we can help improve your command of craft and prepare for a professional writing career. Go to write-la.com, write-la.com for all the details. Our theme music was written and performed by the Australian band The Swarm. Big thanks to them. And our beautiful graphic was designed by my talented daughter, Claire Schulberger. Thank you to her. Thank you to you. Thanks for listening. We are grateful. And if you have a question, you can email us, tim@write-la.com. We'll be back soon. But for now, say goodbye, Tony.
Goodbye.